coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm. Everybody, hello, how you doing? Chris Jordan here, coming at you live from Austin, Texas tonight. I say that with the caveat of I will be pre-recorded the next 2 weeks. We will be live to Facebook, we'll be live to the website, we'll be live everywhere as always. But please do remember that if I try to tune in while I'm at work, sometimes I'm working late. Sometimes my amazing wife, Amy, fires off the episodes that are pre-recorded from the studio here. I typically handle the live stream to the website, with my awesome equipment from WebWorks Wireless. But, I say that so that if you are chatting on Facebook or anything like that and you don't hear me respond with like, hey, somebody on Facebook mentioned this question. That's why, because we'll be pre-recorded. We have some great conversations coming up. As a matter of fact, we have W. Wallace Wagner coming up next week talking about faith and UFOs, both ways, how UFOs affect faith and how faith affects UFOs. He has a really, really interesting and very personal story about that that we will get into with him. In addition to that, in that episode, we will be talking with the awesome Lady Anne Celine from KPNL Radio, as well as Caravan of Lore. We will be talking to her about manifestation, bringing things about in the new year, how to really kind of change your vibration and move yourself toward that which you desire in your life. The episode 59, 2 weeks from now, we will be talking about Mothman, specifically about the phenomenology of the study of the aftermath of Mothman, with Bill Kasulis. We'll be talking with him. Great conversation there. And then earlier today, I actually pre-recorded with the amazing Robert Duncan. Robert, great conversation today. That was fantastic. Talking about the matrix, the illusory reality in which we live, the concept of non-local reality, the idea that not only are we all connected via vibration, but we are only vibration. That's all we are. And what that actually means, and other things like neurobrain interfaces and brain networks, where literal matrix type of control is there. Wild stuff with Robert Duncan. Speaking of wild stuff, before we get started with our guests, let's make sure to hop on over real quick while we are live and check out the news of the week. News of the week is always brought to you by the Curious Realm Facebook group. Stop on by Facebook. Join the group, join the conversation. Just some of the articles that came out here in the last week. The quirky history of the Osage orange, Texas's ugliest fruit, also known as horse apples for some folks out there. Will Liam posted a great little meme article about the Japanese company that can record your dreams. And we get into quite a bit of that with Robert Duncan in that episode. Out of The Guardian, if aliens contact humanity, who decides what we do next? Interesting article there. Out of IFL Science, physicists have found a time crystal inside of a children's toy. That one's pretty amazing. And the fact that they have found time crystal properties inside of average, ordinary crystals, really, really cool science. Unfortunately, the Bills Hamlet... The Buffalo Bills player Hamlin is in critical condition after his collapse on the field last night. Out of IFL Science, a giant goldfish hybrid as heavy as a 10-year-old is a big reminder not to dump your pets. That is example of a koi that somebody dumped and it got loose. Out of neuroscience news.com, ketamine found to increase brain noise. That is just some of the articles that are fit to print out there, folks, that are stirring conversation, getting things going in our Curious Realm group. Stop on by and join that conversation. While you are on Facebook, of course, make sure to stop on by the Curious Realm website. CuriousRealm.com is where you can find all of our episodes. That is where you can follow us on all forms of social media. We are on about 20, 30 different distribution platforms, including things like Rumble, Gab, Minds, Clout Hub, BitChute, MeWe, quite a few of the alternative platforms that are out there, which we have really been making a decent splash on. It's been fantastic. As a matter of fact, one of the guests who has been making the splash on there whenever we have her on is the amazing Ella LeBain. She is the author of Who's Who in the Cosmic Zoo. She is our guest here in this section. We will be talking about Nibiru, the legendary planet spoken of by researcher Zachariah Sitchin and in ancient texts. What is Nibiru? Where does the teaching of Nibiru come from? And where's Nibiru at? What's the story with Nibiru? Welcome to the show. Welcome back to the show. Ella LeBain, how are you doing?
Hi, thank you for having me.
I am so glad to have you back.
Happy New Year to you and everyone who's listening.
Well, Happy New Year to you too as well. My wife said to say, make sure to say hi to you. She thoroughly enjoyed her conversation with you at MUFON this last year. So,
Yes. She's so sweet. It was so nice to meet all of you.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It was a fantastic conference, and our conversations since have been absolutely fun. I have thoroughly enjoyed the energetic nature of them. Last time we talked a little bit about solar anomalies, things like that. Last time you were on, and in the second part of this, actually, we will be featuring Mary Joyce and talking about anomaly hunting. But tell us a little bit about Who's Who in the Cosmic Zoo and how you came to the world of researching Nibiru and things like that.
Well, Who's Who in the Cosmic Zoo was first published in 2012 with my first book, which is basically a compendium on who are the ETs and the aliens, you know, how to identify them and discern which kingdom they come from. So that began my work, and it just expanded into six books. So I know you have a book five on which is called The Heavens, and that one is all about Nibiru and what's going on up in space with the sun and UFOs, because it's all connected. And then my sixth book, which basically is the final one in the series, it should be out this summer, which is called Heaven's Witness. So that sort of completes it. And that's on the astronomy, astrology, cosmology, the stuff that's been covered up from the Church of Rome and suppressed through doctrines of anti-Semitism, and just it's created a lot of confusion, you know, with the differences between astrology and astronomy and cosmology. But it's a language, and it's an ancient language that was passed down, that was literally given to us by the gods, the sons of heaven that landed on the earth. I mean, it's recorded in the books of Enoch. So I'm just, you know, this has been my work, you know, to connect these dots for people, because there's a lot of people that have become confused, especially because of church doctrine. So I'm attempting to unravel that.
Well, and you know, there of course was quite the campaign for quite a long time regarding suppression of astronomy, astrology, things like that, yeah, with the Catholic Church. Absolutely. And especially whenever it comes to suppressing other knowledge from the Middle East.
Yeah,
there was a decent campaign for that as well. When it came to things like Samaria, Babylon, that kind of stuff.
Definitely. And it's all connected, and it ties right into the fact that the Vatican has been studying and tracking Nibiru for centuries. They use their own telescopes, which are called Lucifer. One is on the mount in Rome in the Vatican, and the other one sits on Mount Graham in Tucson, Arizona. And they're both ordered by these two Jesuit astronomer priests. So, you know, this is part of this cover up, really, that you and I were communicating about before the show. And so it dovetails right into it. You know, it's interesting. I mean, you know, about the astrology piece is that, you know, that of course they suppressed all of that, but yet they use it for themselves.
Mm. So, yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah, precisely. Even the whole where Christmas lies in the calendar.
Exactly. So. Well, we just celebrated the whole story, and the three magi were astrologers.
Yeah.
That's how they knew where to go, and they followed the stars. So in the ancient times, astrology and astronomy were one. It wasn't separated. You know, similarly to, you know, how politics, the government policies, and religion were one. And then, of course, you know, through our history, we separated. But, you know, what goes around comes around is actually an astronomical term. You know, I know people use it to describe karma, but, you know, it has to do with the orbit of planets and our trek around the sun. And this is what we're in right now. You know, what we're dealing with now is something that's happened already. So, you know, we have to look to the past for understanding, for patterns, for answers.
Now, first off, when you say this is something that has happened before, let's start cracking that nut, because we have to understand, of course, what happened before so that we know what to look out for and what is currently happening. So let's start at the beginning there with what has happened before and what we know.
Well, we know from the Sumerian tablets, the stone tablets, that this planet that we call Nibiru, also called a comet planet by the Chilean astronomer Ferrada, because it has two tails. It has wings. It looks like it has wings, but it's actually like a comet tail, except it's not like a traditional comet, you know, where you see like the long tail. It just has a lot of junk around it that is red iron oxide with a bunch of stuff, okay, asteroids, meteorites, fireballs, and even, you know, smaller comets. And that's why the ancients called it the destroyer, because every time it came around, it destroyed things. It created cataclysms in our solar system. For instance, our asteroid belt, you know, which is situated between Mars and Jupiter, was once a planet that just got broken up and it was caught in that orbit, and there's just a bunch of little pieces now, which is interesting because if anyone remembers the original Star Wars movie, it starts off with them watching their planet. Exactly. So that's why I always say the truth is stranger than fiction, and that, you know, we're getting these messages in science fiction to prepare us for what not only already happened, but what is to come. So every time Nibiru comes around, which according to Zachariah Sitchin's material, he calculated, you know, based on the what he interpreted from the tablets, was that it was a 3,600 lunar year orbit around us. Okay, so that like kind of translates to 3,567 years approximately, because, you know, they've changed the calendars so many times. And I always say it reminds me of that Chicago song, you know, does anybody really know what time it is? Because, you know, they've gone Enochian calendar, which is 364 days a year. And then, you know, now we're on this Gregorian calendar from the Church of Rome, which really has no astronomical it doesn't make any astronomical sense because it doesn't follow, you know, either the moon or the sun. It's just, you know, everything is off. And even the names of the months are off, you know, like October means oct, means eight, sept means seven, yet it's the ninth month and October is the 10th month and November is, you know, and December should be the 10th month, but it's actually the 12th month. And it's a mess. And it ties into one of the Old Testament prophecies about the end times and the final Antichrist who changes the times and the seasons. So that's what happened. You know, I mean, our calendar that we go by now, it was designed to throw people off so that they couldn't, you know, for lots of things. They couldn't tune in. They couldn't know what was going on. They couldn't tell which time they were in. And This is what my final book on my series focuses on the different, the calendar shenanigans, I call it, you know.
Well, and it's interesting that you bring that up, because whenever you look at the Sumerian star calendars, things like that, none of the Mayan calendar, none of that is based off of solar observation. Not a lick of it. Every bit of it is lunar. Every bit of it is observed on a lunar calendar and on a lunar cycle and on a cycle that occurs on like 13,000 years.
Well, yeah, but the Gregorian calendar doesn't even match the lunar. I mean, like, calendar
exactly.
Is lunar.
They are 180 degrees different. Right. I mean, that's the whole reason why, and we've had the conversation with you on before, that's why the Hebrew people on the Orthodox calendar are in, like, the year 6,000 right now.
Almost, yeah.
You know?
Right. Because, 5783.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's debatable because they moved away from the Enochian calendar, which really has the most accurate. But things have shifted, you know. I mean, every time the system, and let me just preface by saying this is attached to our sun, okay? So our solar system is a binary, and our binary twin, which I call, and a lot of us call, Nemesis, because it's kind of like our sun's dark twin, and it is a dark star. It is a brown dwarf star that has died, and it's dimmed. It doesn't radiate anymore. However, just like our sun will shine on Venus or Mars or any of the other planets and make it look like a star, the same thing happens, with, Nemesis. And we don't see it all the time because it's in our lifetime, it's been, when we were born, it was behind the sun.
Yeah.
But now it's coming around. So, and it moves around the sun. So sometimes we see it near the sun, like on the side of it, and sometimes on the top and on the bottom, because you know, of orbital dynamics. It's just angles and retrograde motion and all that stuff. But with it is its own mini solar system with seven planets that have moons. And one of them is Nibiru. So Nibiru actually is the oddball of the whole system, because it doesn't follow the orbital rest of them do. And it doesn't, it's tilted, it's elongated, and it's out there. It goes and it seems to intersect with us. So this is why our scientists have been confused for years. They knew that there was something. There's always been this search for planet X, and because of perturbations in our solar system, which is how they, and I'm going to say rediscovered, because the planets have always been there. We were just not made aware of them. So that's how they rediscovered Uranus and Neptune and Pluto, because they kept seeing perturbations, and then they saw, there's perturbations around Pluto. There must be something else out there. And there was. And in 1983, they sent up IRIS, the infrared astronomical satellite, which was the first space telescope to perform, surveys of the entire sky at different infrared wavelengths. And that's how they discovered there was something definitely out there beyond Pluto, which, you know, they basically said was Planet X or Planet 10 at the time.
And
now they've changed the order of the planets again.
I've got that article up, actually. I found that just before went live and just before we connected. I sent it to you and I was like, check this out. Here it is,
yes,
folks.
Well done.
From Washington Post, possibly as large as Jupiter is the headline from December 30th, 1983. So we are quite literally looking at the anniversary of that having just passed. 30-year anniversary of that just passed. And
isn't that amazing? 30 years. Wow.
A heavenly body, possibly as large as the giant planet Jupiter, and probably possibly so close to Earth that it would be part of this solar system, has been found in the direction of the constellation Orion by an orbiting telescope aboard the U.S. infrared astronomical satellite. So mysterious is the object that astronomers do not know if it's a planet, a giant comet, a nearby, quote, protostar that never got hot enough to become a star, distant galaxy, so shrouded in dust that none of its light cast by its stars ever gets through. Quote, all I can say to you is we don't know what it is. End quote. From Dr. Gary Negebauer, from the IRIS chief scientist at the California Jet Propulsion Lab. So that was the actual article of that finding.
Washington Post, and then the New York Times also reported on it that same week or day, also January, because they launched the IRIS January 25th of 1983. So that was 5 days after the launch.
Yeah.
So this was reported. It was in the mainstream news, as you just read, and also the New York Times and other places. And then after that, it got covered up. Okay, and that was during the Reagan era, and Reagan issued an executive order imposing absolute silence about Nibiru, and it just disappeared off of all the news, and NASA, you know, the whole alphabet soup, the CIA, the NSA, the FBI, and every observatory in the world, and the scientific community seemed to have become part of that cover up. And scientists were missing that were trying to reveal the truth. And yet, despite all that, NASA kept tracking it. And they know exactly what's going on.
Yeah. And right here, whatever it is, Houck said. The mystery body is so cold its temperature is no more than 40 degrees above absolute zero, which is 456 degrees Fahrenheit below zero. The telescope aboard IRIS is cooled so low and is so sensitive it can, quote, see objects in the heavens that are only 20 degrees above absolute zero. When the IRIS scientists first saw the mystery, the body, and calculated that it could be as close as 50 trillion miles, there was some speculation that it might be moving toward Earth. Quote, it's not incoming mail. Quote, I want to douse that idea with as much cold water as I can. So, yeah, I mean, this and it goes on to say how the sensitivity, because of the amount of helium that they had to use to see it, the sensitivity of the telescope dropped and they were no longer able to get readings from it. Things like that, because it took a massive amount of helium to cool the cameras down to be able to get that footage to begin with. But interesting that, yeah, like, a massive object larger than Jupiter. This isn't a small rock. This isn't a small, like, maybe Pluto isn't a planet anymore. Maybe it's a planetesimal reclassification. This is something massive.
Yes, that's why it was dubbed and named the Destroyer, because every time it came around, it created problems. And it doesn't mean that it has to hit the Earth. It's the fact that it has this long tail, and it's huge, and it has a massive, you know, energy field and a lot of red iron oxide that precedes it. And here's the thing, unlike regular comets, the tail precedes it, as opposed to when you see a comet, you think, so everything that people know about comets has to be reversed, because the comet tail usually comes after the comet passes through. This is the other way around. The tail precedes it, because it's just, that's why it's been illustrated and pictured with wings, because it's like two tails. And this is creates plasma exchange between it itself and other celestial bodies like our sun and other planets, and it has moons. So as it comes rolling through, sometimes, and this has happened in the past, because you asked what happened in the past, is one of the moons hit a planet in our solar system and created the asteroid belt, and that was detailed by Emanuel Velikovsky in his book, World in Collision. And, he collaborated with Albert Einstein on all of this stuff. And this was way before NASA even got formed. And later on, when they did and they started confirming stuff that both Einstein and Velikovsky had done on paper, you know, that was done with equations and physics. So this, you know, what they wrote down in the 30s and the 40s really got confirmed when they started seeing this stuff with the instruments. So now we have the JW Space Telescope. We're hoping that we're going to get some accurate and clear footage there, but I wouldn't hold my breath that they're going to share it. But, you know, as all secrets, it's hard to keep. There's whistleblowers all the time. And we have whistleblowers that have worked for NASA that have been privy to this, what they're seeing in the newer versions of IRIS, because that's kind of an old thing now. And they're talking. And one of them, he's known as Mike from around the world, and that's all we know about him. He doesn't give his last name, but he gives tons of information about this and what they know. And, you know, this is one of the things he is describing is the tail and the asteroid belt. Asteroids in this tail that is going to come and just storm our system and the Earth.
Well,
so that happens first, and that can go on for years. I mean, that could just be like, you know, like a a really bad long storm that.
Oh,
and
sure.
Then this is where the Bible prophecy ties in, because it says that, you know, a lot of people get confused about these scriptures, but I want to make a point here that Joel 2:31 has been misused so many times by Christians because they're constantly thinking, oh, this is it. But every time there's a lunar eclipse, blood moon, which isn't that unusual, okay?
No.
Blood moons are total lunar eclipses, which happen. Yeah. Eclipses happen like clockwork. Every 6 months we have eclipses, whether they're going to be total or partial or annular, that's what changes each time. But when there's a total and it's a blood moon, meaning, you know, the moon looks like it's like an amber brownish red color, they call that a blood moon. But they have attached that to Joel 2:31, which has absolutely nothing to do with lunar eclipses. Joel 2:31 is one of the prophecies about Nibiru, the comet planet, which basically, and this would tie into the asteroid storm that is coming upon the Earth, that is going to cause, because remember, the tail is full of red iron oxide. So what does red iron oxide do? It's going to
filter everything to a red spectrum.
Exactly. And that's why we're seeing red and magenta sunrises and sunsets, because that's what's coming. It's very close. It's coming in close. But when this actually sprays, you know, we're getting all these coronal mass ejections and all this, and it actually sprays over the Earth, it's going to cause the moon to turn red and the sun to go dark, which is Joel 2:31. And that is, it's impossible through every law of physics for us to have a solar eclipse and a lunar eclipse at the same time, because a solar eclipse is a new moon and a lunar eclipse is a full moon, and they happen 14 days apart. This is not any of that. This is the entry of this system coming between us and the moon and the sun, which turns the sun dark and which turns the moon red. So I just want to make that clear, that's what the prophecy is about. So when we are hearing this whistleblower talk about, oh, we're going to have an asteroid storm, and that precedes the passing of Nibiru, the flyby. So when the flyby happens, and, you know, everybody asks when, I mean, this is the million-dollar question. You know, when Sitchin was asked during his lectures, everybody asked that question, and he was not allowed to tell. Okay. And, you know, he did say, well, it's not going to happen in my lifetime. And he was right, because he passed in 2010. It didn't happen in his lifetime, but that doesn't mean it's not going to happen in our lifetime.
Well, and let's get into that, because we actively have a listener who has chimed in on the chat asking how often does this come around? And that he heard last time it was closed or close, that there's intelligent life there, and that they come by and check on us.
Well, I don't have any problem with people believing in that, because that is pretty much what the Sumerian tablets described. The beings that, and there's a whole bunch of them. I mean, there's a whole king's list. They lived for thousands of years on the earth. I mean, this was the age of the gods. And they were called the Anunnaki, which basically in Sumerian meant those who came from the heavens to earth. So, you know, let's just call them extraterrestrials for our lingo. And that's what I believe is why we are seeing an uptick in UFOs around the sun. I mean, and I sent you some of those pictures.
Yes, I'm bringing those up as we speak. I just had up the image of the Anunnaki and the planets around the sun, the actual image of their solar map, where it shows that there's another planet.
Awesome. Yes. And that's why Sitchin wrote his first book called The 12th Planet.
Yeah.
Because he said that the Sumerians counted from the outside of the solar system in. So yeah. We count from the inside out, you know. So everything we do, it's kind of like they did it, you know, like a pull the glove inside out. They did the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they called it, and they counted the sun and the moon as planetary, you know, like as planets in a sense. So that's where the number 12 came from.
Sure, because they move. I mean, that makes perfect sense because they move at different rates.
That's right. And also because they were coming from outside the solar system.
Yeah.
So if they're coming from, you know, beyond, and they're entering into our solar system.
Their map wasn't ecliptic on. It was omniscient view.
Right.
It was an overhead view.
Exactly. And they weren't necessarily Earth-centered, because we know that there were settlements on Mars. But whatever happened with that planet, you know, and this was a passing, we believe, a flyby, a passing of Nibiru that caused that planet, which, you know, based on the history, was called Maldek or Rahab in the Bible, and it was broken up into pieces. And it created such a storm and created such a change in, yep, in the atmosphere of Mars that they could no longer live on Mars. So they came to Earth, which is why Mars and Earth have so many similarities.
Well, and, you know, especially if you're talking about even if you're talking about a rogue planet, not even a rogue system, not even, you know, like what we're talking about here, the effects of that to begin with, just swinging through a solar system, much less colliding with anything or coming. Because, if you had a Jupiter or larger size planet swing through close to the orbit of something like Mars, absolutely it could strip the gravitationally pull the gases toward it.
Yes, and the plasma exchange, but it wasn't even Nibiru that caused that. According to the record, it was one of its moons.
Yeah.
So it comes in with an entourage. It has a bunch of stuff around it. And each time it comes around, it seems to come in a different, like a similar space, but a different space. Sometimes it's like closer, sometimes it's further away, which, you know, there's many researchers that have gone over this through and matching it up to the cataclysms in our own history. So, like, you know, 34,000 years ago, approximately, we had the last time it had passed through was the times of the Exodus in the Old Testament. Mm. So they had the plagues, remember? And that's why a lot of people believe that what's going on now, what we've just lived through the past 2 and a bit years, you know, with the pandemic and all of that stuff, was just is a, you know, a repeat of what happened back then. Okay. And then, of course, there were other issues. You know, there was darkness. There was, you know, changes in the earth. There were earth changes. So depending on where it comes, like how far, you know, it can mean, you know, severity of cataclysm based on, you know, like a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being like, okay, the planet absolutely breaks up into a million pieces, like what happened to Maldek. Whereas that doesn't happen all the time. What generally seems to happen is that it creates pole shifts.
Yeah.
Okay. And cataclysms on the Earth, where the water takes over the land, and then new land comes out of the water, and they go into ice ages, and that seems to be Earth's history of Earth changes.
Well, and, you know, there's a lot of people that, number one, we have full-on magnetite records in lava deposits, things like that, of actual polar flips.
Exactly.
Full-on north goes south, south goes north. Like if you spun a quarter on a table and it was able to, instead of stopping, keep spinning and then go back to rotation. That's basically what it shows we do about every 37,000 years, something like that.
Absolutely. And, you know, we've been seeing that with people have been watching the Ancient Apocalypse with Graham Hancock.
Beautifully done. I've seen it three times.
Wasn't that great? But he proved, it's almost like he didn't mention Nibiru, but he proved that all this whole history of changes, you know, something came from out there that caused this to happen. Okay, and that is what this, you know, a lot of us believe, that's what fiction believe, that's what all these researchers believe, is what we call, what I call the Nemesis Nibiru system, because it's not just one object.
Well, and it doesn't even, for these effects to happen, Ella, for these massive effects to happen, it doesn't even need to swing near our orbit. It just needs to come into, because the gravitational wave of effect on Jupiter's effect on Saturn, like, it will be a chain reaction of gravitational wave, one perturbation and the next one.
That's right, the perturbations and the magnetism it causes to our sun and all of our solar system, that's enough to, and what we're seeing is changes on all the planets in our solar system. Well, it's not just Earth.
No, absolutely not. The great red spot on Jupiter is shrinking. The actual solar storm that's happening there, that's been happening as long as Jupiter has been observed, that is shrinking in size right now. The polar ice caps on Mars are melting. I'm not saying that we do not. Isn't we absolutely something? Contribute to a cycle, but make no mistake, folks, with or without us, the Earth's North Pole is on a drift of almost 3/4 of a mile a day. It's crazy.
Yes, things are changing pretty rapidly. And I sent you some illustrations of the pole shift, and we have I've got that
wobble axis shift map up right now.
There you go. And there was another one recent.
This is as of December of this year.
That's right.
Of this last year.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago that was done. And also that we're seeing the North Magnetic Pole has literally moved from the Canadian Arctic to Siberia.
Yeah.
And 40 degrees, they're saying, a lot of people are saying 40 degrees is that like place where it is, where there's just like the point of no return, where it's like the top, you just nudge it and the whole thing is going to flip on its, do the 180.
Yeah, I
and
mean, a lot of people, a lot of people ask when, to when begin Nibiru with why passes. When you see a globe that it's at a tilt, it's because that's our natural tilt of axis of spin to begin with. We aren't sitting polar up and down. We're sitting at a tilt in the solar system to begin with. But
so this picture, so the axis, that's exactly right what you just said. But our natural tilt has wobbled.
Yes.
And that's because the axis has moved. And this has to do with what's going on inside the Earth. So the Earth's core is being magnetized by what's happening from the sun, which is evidenced by the fact that recently we're seeing animals go in these circles all around the world. Okay, it's bizarre, it's sad, it's like, but what is going on there? They are tuning into the magnetosphere and the magnetism that is coming from under the Earth. Just like if you remember in 2004 when we had, that was called the Boxing Day tsunami, remember? And like there was an earthquake that was like an 8.9 under the water, and it created this tsunami, and nobody saw it coming, and they were all vacationing.
Yep.
But the elephants in Thailand knew what was happening. All the animals got out of the way, and they went to higher ground, and like it's amazing, but no animals got harmed. all these people, I think it was like a $25,000, I don't know, something like that.
It was horrifying. It was horrifying.
So the point is that the animals can tune in to what's going on in the earth. And we're seeing this the past 2 months, and there's videos all over the internet of animals circling.
Yes.
And that is because this axis, the earth's axis, is being shifted. And there's all this. And then here's another thing, okay, is this magma, okay, that's being, you know, dislodged from underground, which is creating not only earthquakes, but volcanic eruptions. We have sleeping volcanoes that are now waking up, okay, all over the place. And this is another thing that the whistleblower is warning about, is this heating up of the ground where people and animals actually start to feel it. And the warmth comes up and the magma comes up. Okay, and that's what he's, what the whistleblower has been, that's what they're, and, you know, I'd like to also tell you and your guests why the government has been keeping this secret. Why aren't they telling us?
Let's get into that real quick, because, there's of course, like we were saying, there's been the religious suppression of things like Sumerian star maps, Book of Enoch, all kinds of things for hundreds and hundreds of years. Even now, there's very little church, quote, teaching on the subject. The only thing that they have done is make official announcements saying that they do not believe that in existence of life outside of this sphere would interfere with any teaching of the church.
Yeah,
big announcement to begin with.
If that's not Monday morning quarterbacking, I don't know.
It's definitely one of those like, we don't have an official teaching, but we're here to tell you it wouldn't interfere with any of our teachings. So if it's there, okay.
Well, I would caution anyone listening to their official teachings. I mean, they actually wrote a book, How to Baptize an Alien. Okay. Would you baptize an alien? This is written by the two Jesuit priest astronomers who are in charge of these Lucifer telescopes. So they are preparing, make no mistake, they are preparing for contact with aliens and the arrival of Nibiru, because they believe it's one and the same. And this is my understanding as well, is that the cover-up of Nibiru and the UFO cover-up are intricately and connected. And one, you can't pull the string on one and not unravel the other. And this is evidenced by President Reagan's executive order, which has you know, kind of got dissolved. Because this was a national security law, okay, that had to do with all kinds of stuff. And the secrecy of what these space telescopes were seeing was put in there, and Nibiru was one of them, okay? And let's not forget that under the Reagan administration is when the SDI program, the Strategic Defense Initiative, also tagged and named Star Wars. The Star Wars program was initiated under the Reagan era. And there is a belief among researchers that Reagan and Gorbachev and Thatcher and a number of others all got together and decided they had to keep this under wraps in order to keep the debt system going. Okay, because if people knew what was coming, they were afraid that it would just unravel the status quo. They wouldn't pay their mortgages, they wouldn't pay their credit cards, the banks would collapse, everybody would just go nuts. So that, you know, also dovetails into the UFO cover-up, because they, you know, not only, you know that there's extraterrestrial craft and alien technology and all the stuff that they've known. Even Trump, remember, he said, oh, well, he learned something about what actually happened at Roswell. Oh, it was very interesting. And, you know, what we're hearing from the insiders is that, you know, they saw that the beings that came out of that craft had human DNA. They were aliens. They were gray aliens, so to speak, but they had human DNA in them. And that is just like, okay, that's a whole nother paradigm shift. What are we dealing with here? Mm. So they kept it under wraps. So they've been trying to protect the status quo, protect society, protect religion, et cetera, and especially the banking. You know, they want to keep collecting mortgages and all of that stuff. So anyway, the executive order apparently got, you know, sort of gobbled up in other executive orders with George Bush, who used to be the head of the CIA. And then, of course, when Obama came in and he sort of rewrote a lot of stuff, he kept some of that going. But it got exposed during the Trump administration. So one of the first, and this is something I found really interesting, how things are hidden, you know, like Russian doll type stuff in these orders. And they do this stuff all the time, Congress. They call it one thing and then you read it and then you see that, oh my God, what does that have anything to do with healthcare? Okay. But it was in the Obamacare bill. And so that was one of the first things that President Trump did when he became president, is he gutted the Obamacare executive orders and the bills and all that jazz. And part of it was the Nibiru cover-up. I mean, this is, you can't make this stuff up. And that's why he started talking about, you know, the Space Force and, oh, we're going to put people on Mars and go back to the moon and all that stuff. Okay. So he was very excited about learning about this. Okay. But at the same time, you know, look at what happened to him. I mean, you know, at least he didn't have the same fate as JFK. Okay. Because he wanted to come out and tell everybody about what he inherited from the Eisenhower administration, which was the agreement with the aliens. And they didn't want him doing that. And we all know what happened to him. So, you know, this is real. I mean, you know, they've been, you know, on one hand, I have to say that I can understand, you know, the reason for national security. Okay. But, you know, now it's like we're in the age of knowledge, the age of science. And it's like, okay, just tell people, you know, it's like people have a right to know, whether they want to know, whether they choose to read it or not. Let that be their prerogative.
Two hard questions. Number one, why, I mean, of course you addressed partially why hide it. There's financial incentive, things like that. I mean, of course, cortisol is a great way to rule. If you can make everybody into a cortisol junkie and just make them a fear monger and just like gobble up fear like crazy. Absolutely. You have a fantastic means of control of a population. And
well, psychological manipulation of the past 2 years with the vaccines and the pandemic and stuff?
Well, I mean there's quite a bit of that. There's been the concept for a long time of Project Bluebeam, the idea mm-hmm. of using a falsified invasion to literally activate the religious right, and move them to a state of panic, to basically enact a means of control. Because this wild thing's happening, we need to lock stuff down and be in a state of police control. That's one of many theories that's been out there for years. But
absolutely, but it's not just the right, it's the left that does it too.
Oh no, it's on both sides. All of this is on both sides. Yeah. The butter is equally spread on the bread.
An agenda to create a one world religion. How on earth are they ever going to do that when people in the same religion can't even get along?
Oh, sure.
Okay,
sure.
That's my big question.
Most definitely.
But what you just said is one way that they can do that by, you know, Project Bluebeam and saying, the aliens have arrived and all
that.
This
is, of
stuff.
Course, one of the big reasons why, and, you know, granted, the headlines were very zazzy and it made it seem like NASA hired 12 theologians. Not quite what happened.
Yeah.
They 12 theologians happened to be scientists who were studying in this field
astronauts.
They got part of it. They got part of the money. But the whole reason to ask them was, once again, going through like what they did with the Brookings Institute. What would happen? Like, if you're going to talk to anybody about what's going to change the mass mindset of humanity and don't get me wrong, folks, this is not a religious rant or anything like that. However, go the world over, and if you are a non-believer, you are the minority, period. Minority from tribe in Africa to major city across the world. You are the minority. So when you think about that,
mm-hmm.
you have the majority of people that you could motivate and move in that way if you can get the two married, and if you can figure out what it is that moves humanity spiritually and how to communicate that. Like, how do you, I mean, prime example is, yeah, the church. They are one of, aside from like Judaism, things like that, they are one of the only ones where it's like, this is the rubric, then you stick to it.
Well, that's how it's been since the Roman Empire.
But also being
agenda.
It's also how do you assure the fact that what's happening in Myanmar with a man that wears a collar is the same thing that's happening in Detroit?
You know? Well, this is where the New World Order. I mean, Bush talked about it. This is the end time prophecy about the one world government, the one world religion, the one world currency. Now we can see how they're creating the one world currency that is going to turn it into some digital, debit and credit type stuff, do away with cash and all the other stuff that I can see happening. We can also see the global government, the United Nations. Now, I was told back in the 90s that the United Nations was going to be transformed in the end times, and it was going to be similar to the United Federation of Planets. You know, sounds very Star Trek-ish, but, there's no coincidence that why did the ex-Israeli space chief, Chaim Eshed, come out at the end of Trump's term and say, the Galactic Federation, feel that humanity isn't ready to learn about them. Oh, and by the way, Trump knows about them, and Israel and America have been working with them and have been in agreements with them. I mean, this is all on the record. You can't make this stuff up.
It was pretty wild. It was pretty wild.
Right?
Is for certain.
Okay. So who is this Galactic Federation? Well, that's what I attempted to answer in my first book. That's what I'm delineating and identifying there. But the fact that they are in play here. Okay, and that they may even be part of this one world government where they end up in being integrated into our United Nations, and then it becomes a global government. We can see that happening. But the other part of the prophecy is the one world religion, which personally I can't get my head around, because I'm anyone who knows me, I got one foot in one camp, one foot in the other. I'm a hybrid, and nobody agrees in either camp, even with each other.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you can't even get Christians or Jews to believe, to agree, and they're all in the same religion. How is everybody going
to
agree on one religion? Yeah. So this is going to be a mass manipulation that I think is going to be orchestrated by the arrival official announcement of the alien presence, because one of them is going to end up the embodying this being who seems to rule this, and all hell breaks loose on Earth. But fortunately, we have this system, okay, that's going to come and just kind of cleanse everything. So whatever political shenanigans they're up to, it's not going to last long, okay, because even the prophecy says it's a seven-year thing. Well, so this is not a forever.
The tribulation doesn't happen for all eternity. And I guess the really big question for me is, when it comes to why hide it, is why hide it? This is a solar system wide situation. When Nibiru comes around, you ain't going to be able to hide it.
I think they're having trouble hiding it right now.
I mean, you got people like me out there. Literally, when it comes to it, astronomy is probably the biggest citizen science out there. There are more people who are regular astronomers sitting in their backyard looking at the Horsehead Nebula every night. Then,
and God bless them for that, because we need people looking at the skies, watching stuff, recording it, documenting it, reporting on it.
I mean, so most of our comets in the last few years, large asteroids, things like that, have been found by backyard astronomers.
And look at ufology. I mean, there's tons of stuff that come from just regular people outside looking at the sky and keep doing it. Keep watching.
But I guess that's my question, though, is how far is it going to go? Because, I mean, eventually what will happen is, despite any news stories, what have you, is people will start seeing it.
Well, I sent you a video of, I had taken a video very similar a few years ago, but this was recent. In Poland, where, it was taken from the ground and looking up, and there was another object next to the sun, and it went behind the cloud. So people are seeing this on the ground, okay? And then, of course, we have the planets that keep showing up around the sun in the space telescopes. I mean, there's there's multiple space telescopes that are looking at the sun in the whole color spectrum. You know, you've got the coronagraph, LASCO, the C2, the C3, the Helio viewer, the cactus. There's so many different angles they're looking at. It's coming in black and white and different colors. And we're seeing massive spherical objects around the sun that can't be, they're not comets, they're not spaceships, but then we're also seeing spaceships, and the spaceships are huge as well. Okay, so this is why, I tell people that this is all connected. Like, ufology can't ignore what's happening around the sun with this system. And the scientists and the people who follow what's going on with Nibiru can't ignore ufology either. Because why are we seeing so many planets around the sun and spaceships around the sun simultaneously, sometimes on the same day, certainly in the same week? I mean, I watch this stuff daily. It's public, okay? You can go and it's a 24/7 loop. And what a lot of us do is we look at it, and people screenshot it and put it on the internet. And these are not lens flares, or the space doesn't have. There's no lens flares. It's not like
lens flares don't occur in triangles like that to begin with.
So these are objects.
They occur in straight
lines.
These
are objects. I mean, there's no question about it. We're seeing these objects. And why are we seeing both spaceships and planets? Is because the system is intersecting with us. And there's multiple planets in the system. It's not necessarily Nibiru. It's Nibiru's sisters. And it's moons that keep coming around, and there's extraterrestrial life on there, and they have spaceships. Okay, so I am not the only one that is looking at this. There's tons of people out there looking at this all over the world. So at some point, this is going to become like, you know, mass consciousness. Like, it's a paradigm shift where we just all kind of shift into this reality and accept it. And where do we go from here? You know, the prophecies say that the gods are returning. And who are these gods? Well, these are these extraterrestrials that were recorded in the past that came from this other system that intersected and, you know, came in here and did stuff on Earth and did stuff on Mars and probably other planets and or moons in our solar system. And they're coming back. They're coming back to reap what they've sown from the past because, hey, you know, it says, I mean, they could even be time travelers. It says in the Bible that to the Lord, a day is like 1,000 years. To God, and 1,000 years is like a day. So to us, you know, like this is a long time. To them, it could just be like another day. And Sitchin wrote about that because they called it a shah. And it was like one shah. They'd be back in a shah. And that was like 3,567 years. So, you know, it's all relative. The point is that we're not alone. We've never been alone. And why they've been covering this up in our history, a lot of it has to do with the politics of religion.
Yeah.
And, you know, sure. This is where people they have to get their lives, their hearts, their souls, and their minds straight about their connection with the creator. Okay. And the religion and all that kind of stuff, it's like, it doesn't really, matter as much as the relationship, like, you know, to spirit.
Yeah, the actual connection.
Exactly. This is what I pretty much document.
Does it really matter what carrier you have as long as you have a signal? You know?
Well,
like, as long as your phone rings and works and you can contact somebody on the other side, does it matter if you have T-Mobile, Verizon? You know?
Well, I hear what you're saying, but, you know, because it's such a multi-dimensional multiverse that we're in, there's so many different types of beings that people have been connecting with. And this is what I documented in my book was how to discern, like, because they're not all on our side. You know, they're not all benevolent to humankind. Some of them want to use us just the way we use cattle. Okay, and we are not the top of the food chain. We have to swallow that reality.
Yeah.
You know, and the humans have, you know, been taught, oh, we, you know, we're in charge, we're in this, we're that. And religion has been used as a tool, especially from Rome, to oppress and suppress people. And it's going to get used again when they, because they're the ones that want to be the point. This is a whole battle here. They want to be the point of contact because they want to be the authority of God on Earth. And so the aliens have to talk to them first before they can come to us. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. This is what comes down the pike from the Vatican. Okay. And why is the Vatican highlighted in the end time prophecy? Okay, this is what people have to look and they have to read the Bible and people say, oh, the Bible is all about religion. It really isn't all about religion. It is about history and prophecy. And if you know history, you know what could come around again. And the reason why we study history is so hopefully we learn its lessons and not to repeat the same mistake. Okay, but it happens anyway. Because it's human nature.
Sure.
People forget, or they've been made to forget, or they've been, you know, sort of like a species with amnesia because they've taken away all this history and knowledge and suppressed it because they don't want us to remember because that would empower us. So history is very important here, especially to understanding the prophecy.
You've also got to remember the importance of the millennia of it ingrained panic, Ella. One of the things that we talk about regularly on the show is never, never underestimate the animal nature of humanity. We are very large, unhairy apes. when it really comes down to it, we 3/4 of what we do is react via instinct.
That's true.
And it's right. hard, and that is hardwired into us as a means of survival. This is what made us successful. This is what made us successful as a species, is doing this. So as long as we keep doing that, and as long as we keep that mentality. Now, the issue is, we have evolved as a humanity since that time, but that hopefully. Part of us remains. And it's hard to fight that. It's hard to fight that. It really is.
It is a battle. It's a battle that everyone fights daily, you know, between the spirit and the flesh. And this is one, again, the prophecy, which is a hopeful one, which is one that should encourage people who are listening, is the promise of God to restore all things, to restore us and to restore our DNA. And what you just described was what I call the fall of humankind, which was genetics. Okay. And this is what the Sitchin material shows us, is that the Anunnaki came and they downgraded our DNA. They did not create humankind, because it's evident that the woman was on the earth before they came.
Yeah. Yeah. You had to have genetic material to start with.
Exactly. So it says, you know, in the early part of the Bible, in Genesis, and you know, Sitchin wrote a book called Genesis Revisited for this very reason, is yep. that, you know, that humans walked with God. They had everything. They walked what we call the glory body, which was like, you know, like being like a superhuman, like having, firing on all 12 cylinders, having everything, knowledge, understanding, love, compassion, the whole thing. Yeah. And the Anunnaki saw this was an opportunity for them, okay, to take over this planet and use these beings to serve them and to create a type of slave race. So they genetically manipulated and downgraded the DNA, which is why today geneticists will look at our DNA and they'll call it junk DNA. But it's not junk, it's just disabled. And this is where the insertion of a Messiah savior in these all the prophecies, because it's in Judaism, besides it's in Christianity, it's in Islam, it's all over. Okay, and the Torah and the Zohar in Judaism talks about the messianic red star, which is Nibiru. Okay. And then when we see that in the sky, we know that the Messiah is coming. And when he comes to restore all things, meaning he's going to take us out of this slave race mentality. That's why he said, both in the old and the new, I've come to set the captives free. That would be us. Okay. So some people are a slave to that animal nature that you were talking about. Some people don't win that battle every day.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be mindful. You have to be like, sure. You know, you have to kind of focus on it. It's work. It's not, well, doesn't come naturally.
And that's why I brought it up.
But when the DNA gets restored, because it's relevant, but when the DNA gets restored, it will come naturally. And that is the hope, okay, is that heaven comes to earth, earth gets raised up, the vibration, which, you know, New Agers call the ascension, and the sun, there's no more darkness, the curse is lifted, and that is the curse, in my opinion, is the downgrading of the DNA. Mm. And the Messiah comes and restores all things, and that is us. So we're created in the image and likeness of God and the gods, it really says, it's in its plurality.
Yes.
And that's something that Sitchin brought out. In their image, the whole sentence is in its plurality. The word Elohim is plural in for gods with an S at the end in Hebrew. So you know, and we become part of this whole galactic society, and part of the goal, you know, and that's probably why the Federation is saying, you know, hey, we're not ready, because a lot of us are still operating in this animal nature, and they don't trust us.
We are in a very low vibration modality as a whole.
Yeah, that's what, but, you know, they have to give people a chance, because just like in the Prime Directive, and this is all connected to that in a way, where they want to pull back and say, well, hey, we can't get involved, we have to let them, then the people, the powers that be, whom they are, whoever they are, governmental officials and this and that, and this is the battle that's going on in our government right now with disclosure, where we have full disclosure, partial disclosure, drip disclosure, piecemeal, you know, somebody has to say, hey, you know, at least this group is ready. Let's give it to them and let them teach others. And that's how it's been with humankind for millennia. Yeah. Right? I mean, it's never been across the board. Oh, everybody gets this. It's like, okay, this group gets it. And then it comes down. It's like, you know, like a almost like a tribal thing, and it spreads around the world. And that's just my opinion. I mean, you know, because I think that, that there are people that need to know this stuff, because I think that it helps with understanding, you know, and it helps you to understand what's going on. Well, because, you know, I mean, that as understanding is just huge.
As we say on the show regularly, Ella, hey, I don't care. Take it all with a tablespoon of salt. The question is, are you willing to add the point of datum to your set of data?
Mm-hmm.
Whether you ascribe to it or not, you don't have to ascribe to H2O as water. You don't have to ascribe to that. It's a point
choice.
Of datum.
That's right.
You know, like you can utterly revoke consent to believing that. That's great, but that doesn't mean it's not a point of datum and a set of data that you need to consider when considering other things that are relative. And that's why the conversation is important, is because you can't make a decision when you are uninformed. You can't make a decision when you don't know what the past actually happened, what actually occurred, what former civilizations believed and thought.
That's right. Education, you know, and people get to make their own choices, you know, but at least allow the system that we're in, you know, to start. Like I'd like to see more of this in news. I'd like to see the news media get turned. I mean, thank God for shows like you. I mean, you put out news, and this is like, you know, this is a part of our freedom, and people have the freedom to know. And like you say, or not to know, they can, but most people don't even know that they don't know.
Yeah.
Because they're not told, hey, this is a thing. This is happening. And also the mockery, you know, there's been like decades of mockery. So anybody that goes near certain subjects, like, UFOs or Nibiru, they're mocked as like, you know, but this,
I'm
coming out where we're running out of conspiracy theories.
I am trying to remember.
Stuff is coming out to be real.
I am trying to remember the guest that recently used the turn of phrase that the government will only disclose what the government is forced to disclose. They'll only disclose what they're forced to disclose. They aren't going to disclose anything unless, A, it's in their vested interest monetarily to do so, or control-wise, or because they're forced to do it. Much like, you know, hey, Lou Elizondo went on TV with CNN with a couple of clips that were, you know, passed for interdepartmental clearance, declassified, but not passed for media clearance, declassified. And then suddenly you have people like Harry Reid and stuff like that going, hey, wait a minute. I sit on the committee that talks about stuff like that. How come I didn't see that? What the hell's this ATIP program? Where'd they get their money? Because I didn't hear about that. You know, and lo and behold, because one thing, we got another conversation. Now we got to have a whole nother conversation, and now it's got to be public.
Congress has taken over. Now you have the UFO committee, and you know, so there is an aspect of it that has to be public because Congress is now, you got to report
to
them.
At the same token, you know, a lot of the disclosure seems to be very good boy-esque, you know, very mm-hmm. much like as though it's a planned point of dissemination, especially when you start looking at the patents that have been released over the last couple few years, things like that, where mm-hmm. people are like, oh, we don't have technology that can make that happen. And it's like, well, I don't know. I mean, Lockheed Martin did just release their patent for a nuclear reactor that can fit in an F-16 jet. So pretty sure we do.
Yeah,
No, I'm not saying that there ain't things out there and that there aren't other species and but what we're seeing on videos that is driving the conversation, that is driving the money, everything else, is that what we're seeing? I would tend to think that it's something that we have much more ready access to, which is our own technology.
I agree. I think we're much further along than people think.
Oh, God,
and
yes.
They've been keeping the advanced stuff to themselves. But, you know, here's what they do. They give it out to filmmakers. Mm. They insert it into these scripts.
Oh, yeah.
And they make movies about it. And people go, oh, wow, wouldn't that be something if that ever happened? And it becomes in the realm of that which is futuristic, not realizing that already happened.
That's right. Exactly.
You know, like Star Trek, you know, I mean,
well, and the
tech that they introduced in the 60s is now our reality.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. And like, because it became such an ingrained part in the culture of the people inventing technology that they were like, oh, man, I'm the one in charge of design now. Buddy, we're getting a communicator. Yeah. I'm making this thing flip open.
You know, I, to be fair, yeah, I know it's just,
cool.
It's a whole game. I mean, it was like part of what the Cold War was about, mm-hmm. was, you know, fighting over the alien tech. But to be fair, you know, there is an aspect of national security which I agree with the nations out there that would, you know, do something that would be the unthinkable.
Most
and
definitely.
This is something. This is like probably maybe even a bigger fear. Than what's going to happen to the Earth when Nibiru passes, okay, is the fact that these rogue nations could get a nuke and use it, you know. So that is a very real fear that all these governments and ours as well, you know. So to be fair, you know, they have to keep certain things close.
Absolutely,
we understand that, but there's plenty of crumbs, let's just put it that way, that they can throw at us.
Enough to make a whole cake with, honey.
Sure, why not? Especially if we all work together. Yeah, I got a crumb, you got a crumb. Hey, we'll all get together. We got a
whole cake. So, well, and much like in the case of citizen scientists, much like in the case of, you know, backyard astronomers, because the conversation is more open, there are more eyes and ears on it.
I think it's great.
The people once were on the fence are no longer on the fence. You
because
know?
Seeing is believing.
Yeah.
You know, when you see stuff with your own eyes.
Well, and once again, whether that comes from an extraterrestrial source or whether or not it's amazing technology that we have that hadn't been released, either way, jaw-dropping and paradigm change.
Yes.
And worthy of the conversation.
Yes, and keep going. I mean, everyone out there who's watching, and, you know, backyard astronomers, ufologists, people who've got their eyes on the sky, keep looking up because things are coming.
That's right.
And, you know, and I think I had sent you that meme, that scripture in Luke that also talks about, you know, how men's hearts were going to fail them when they see what's coming upon the earth. And why is that? And maybe that has something to do with the fact that the governments have been keeping it quiet, and then it all of a sudden shows up one day and people go, what the heck is that? How come they didn't tell us about it?
Yeah.
Okay.
But well, and that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. The big effort to hide something that eventually you ain't going to be able to hide that.
That's right.
You ain't going to be like, once that cusps the edge, you ain't going to be able to hide that.
Nope.
You can't hide it. You can't airbrush that out anymore, because at that point, hey, man, I'm taking pictures of Jupiter and its moons from my backyard with a Mac 90. That's literally a spotting scope. That is not even a telescope. That is a spotting scope for extreme riflery.
Your pictures are awesome.
Thank you.
You got your scope. You've been doing all kinds of, and I saw your Jupiter and the moon pictures.
What I'm catching on a 10 by 10 piece of concrete in my backyard in the middle of a city. My neighbors have three lights on right next to my fence line, and that's what I'm able to get. So
it's amazing.
That's something that is barely larger than a pair of observational binoculars. Some of the groups that I belong to, the things that people have and what they are able to take pictures of and what they're able to do, it is museum quality pieces that these people are putting together of the Andromeda Galaxy, things like that. I took a picture of Neptune. Yeah. If I can see Neptune, not with the rings, I can't see rings, but I spotted the planet Neptune.
That's
and
wild.
I was able to get an image, and I was able to enlarge it enough to have a picture of a dot that I knew was Neptune.
Wow.
I can't see the clouds of Jupiter, but with enough exposure, I can see Jupiter and I can see the three large moons. And every day they change positions.
And doesn't that do something for you spiritually?
It's done something for me since the first, I think it was when Halley's Comet came by. When I was a kid, we went to the observatory at the Houston Museum of Natural Science with Miss Eve, the lady who took care of us. And I was awestruck at the observatory and what it did. And it wasn't until I was a senior in high school and took astronomy. It was the last semester that it was offered at my school. And that's when I fell in love. At that point, that's in morning labs. Frequently, it was me and the teacher. Occasionally, somebody else would show up at 5:30, 6 a.m. on a Thursday to go look at Saturn in the morning sky, something like that.
It's your sense of wonderment. Just such a part of us that
I literally sneak out. My wife and my kid, my wife goes to read to my kid, and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna sneak out for 15-20 minutes. And I hop out with my telescope my camera and snap, 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 snap. And, take maybe about 75-80 shots a night, and out of that come out with 10 that I think I could play with, and out of that I'll keep 3 and really play with them, sharpen them.
What's fascinating is people getting spaceships on the moon from backyard telescopes.
Oh, believe me, many of the fans, whenever they see the pictures, are like, oh man, you're going to see a UFO. I'm like, believe me, I'm looking. I take moving video. That's the plus side. Now I don't have a tracking base, so I can't take hours of video, but I can hit record and have the moon. It's pretty wild because you can see it move through frame in real time. So
it
takes
it's
2 minutes.
Dynamic. It's in one place.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting.
Well, if anyone wants to know, where they can maybe find, because I know I get this question a lot, where they can see stuff around the sun, is the hour, and it really depends on location on the planet. So the further south you are, the more likely people will see. And the hour before sunrise seems to be the most ideal time to see Nemesis or other planets that are around the sun rising that aren't Mercury or Venus or, doesn't belong to us. And there's an observatory in Hawaii on the big island called Wormwood, believe it or not.
Yep.
They called it Wormwood, and Wormwood is the asteroid, the comet that comes out of the system that ends up hitting the Earth. So, the dart system is working really hard to kind of like divert these asteroids and kind of nudge them off their orbit. But this one is in the, this is the one in the Bible. So they name the observatory Wormwood, but they are, or, and it, it is to track, you know, they are seeing stuff there.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you know, people live there, you know, anywhere south, in the southern part, especially now, because we're in winter in the northern hemisphere, you see things and sunset. I'm in Colorado, so we have the mountains that kind of get, you know, obscure our view. But I've caught back in 2018 the double sun. Okay, so people are seeing it. They're seeing it in Russia. They're seeing it in parts of Europe, Poland, now, and
I'm going to give a caveat to those of you who are out there who want to do solar observation things. Like, I have a couple of pretty intense filters for my scope. One of them is so dark that even if you hold it up to a light, you cannot see the light on the other side. Like a light bulb. That's how dark it is. And I'll pop the pictures up on screen right now. They look almost like Krypton. This thing is like dark, dark red. But my setup, the way I have it, I've got my 90 millimeter spotting scope on, I've got like a T-bar on top of my tripod. And so the other side, I can swap out lenses and do normal astrophotography, whatever I want, get wide field views while I'm looking at other stuff. But at the same token, I can focus a long lens, like my 100 millimeter to 600, which is what I'm using for these pictures, and swap my camera between that and the telescope and get close, extreme close up or wide shots. And what happened was, now I normally wear a pair of pretty heavy duty sunglasses while I'm doing this work, because you've got to dial in your stuff to the sun, which means you have to point a telescope at the sun and use a spotting scope to get there. So, my eyes are protected. I'm always very careful to put the back plates, the back screw plates on my lenses, but what I never considered, I didn't even think about, like, oh, I need to put the front lens cap on. What I'm showing there, folks, is a lens cap that was actively burned through like a magnifying lens. So don't be just taking, like, this is probably about an eighth inch thick of plastic. Pretty heavy duty plastic. And if it can burn through that, in the time that it took me to take those four pictures in three different spots, you can see where I was like lining up three different spots. I was so into my camera and what I was doing in the telescope that I didn't even see the fact that right within a foot of my head, a plume of smoke was coming out of the lens cap.
Oh my goodness.
That's how fast it happens. So don't be trying to dial in your telescope without filters on it, without things to block the sunlight, because it will destroy your eyes, not just the optics of your camera. It will melt your corneas. Don't play with it.
Filters are very important.
Not just the filters, but I'm always wearing, like I said, sunglasses to dial in the other one, which is just a little tiny little spotting scope, you know, with a crosshair in it. But man, when I saw what it did to the lens cap, I was like, man, if I didn't have a filter on the end of that while I was taking pictures, that would just like laser beam my eyes like immediately. So yeah, be careful out there if you're doing observations, but that's why I've gotten the solar kit. I'm trying to find a coronal blocker. Where I can actually block the sun out with a dark circle and just see the coronal ejection. That's what I want, because that is how a lot of these images are coming out of these craft and everything else.
Yeah.
So
that's why they have so many different types of space telescopes with the different
filters.
Colors. The filters, and SOHO and the Helio viewer, and you know, yeah. I mean, even on the same day, looking at like three different ones, they're seeing the same object.
Yeah.
We have it in all three different colors. So we know that there's objects around the sun. I mean, yeah. I'm sure NASA knows what's going on. I mean, we have one that we call Big Red, but it's very cratered, and it eclipses our sun every 28 days.
Yeah.
And so what they've been doing, okay, so this is something that people, I'm sure, you know, you've seen the skies chemtrailed all over the planet. Mm. Everybody's been chemtrailing. And this was a decision that was made in the 80s under the Reagan era when he did that executive order, and he collaborated with the other leaders, was ways of retarding the global warming and at the same time covering up what was going on with the chemtrails. And this was one of the reasons, and I know this plays into the area of conspiracy theories, but this really did happen, where the chief NASA astronomer, who was Robert S. Harrington at the time, who was collecting data on Nibiru, had infamous interview with Zachariah Sitchin, and they compared notes. So Sitchin, you know, gave him his stuff that came from the past, and he compared it with what he had from the space telescopes, and they were so close. The only thing, the only discrepancy was, you know, he said, okay, it was coming out of Virgo, and the other one said it was coming out of Libra, which is pretty much in the same area.
Yeah, right next to each other.
Right next to each other. So they were spot on, and it was a very successful collaboration, confirmation of each other's work. Okay. Yeah. And a year later, okay, Harrington, 50 years old, perfectly healthy. Like I said, he was the chief astronomer of NASA. Just all of a sudden comes down with some rare form of esophageal cancer and dies. Okay. And a year later, that's when I met Sitchin. Mm. So he allowed me to interview him at the When Cosmic Cultures Meet conference, which was held in Washington. It was like a one of a kind conference in Washington, D.C. It was like 1995. And he, when he gave his spiels and he did his talks, everyone, and I'd been to multiple talks of his, and it's what they ask at the end. So when is Nibiru coming? And he was always very tight-lipped about it. And here's why. Because he was threatened. So I met him a year after this had happened, and he was very shaken by it.
Oh, I bet.
Okay? Because they threatened him that if he told people when, then they would stop his work. So he was allowed to continue doing his lectures and doing his tours, and, you know, until he died, you know, natural causes, old age, in January of 2010. But you know, Harrington, and they named one of the planets. Like I sent you that illustration of the Nibiru system, and yeah. They named one of the planets after him, Harrington, and the other one, one of the moons of Nibiru, was named after Carlos Munoz Varada, which he was the Chilean astronomer who very accurately predicted this, and he called it Hercobalus, which is like the Greek term and for the destroyer, and he was from the 1940s. Now, I found it interesting, just to connect a dot here, that also out of Chile came the TRAPPIST-1 discovery.
Mm.
And the TRAPPIST-1 system was basically named after the telescope. The astronomers used this telescope in Chile, and that was the name of the telescope. They found the brown dwarf star, like 3 light years away, approximately, with 7 Earth-sized planets, which was the biggest disclosure of 2017, and they named it after their telescope. So now it's called TRAPPIST-1. So I question this. I don't know. I don't purport to know. Is this the same system that the ancients told us about that was literally written in stone.
Mm.
Because it's very close. And when you see the diagram, like I sent you one, which was like a sort of an approximation of where and how far Nemesis was from the sun.
Yeah.
I mean, is this the brown dwarf that they discovered? Or is it Proxima, the Proxima B and the Proxima C, which is only 4 light years away? It's literally our neighbor.
Well, and that's exactly what that article was saying, was that would make this the closest astronomic neighbor that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And full on a part of our system. So to know that we have that dwarf star dead system on our outskirts.
And its planets would somehow intersect with us from time to time, just like we, you know, have traffic on a highway and we, you know, pass each other or sometimes collide, you know. And this is why the prophecies, this is what made me go, oh, wow. You know, because it's like it's in the Old Testament and it's in the book of Revelation. So it's a match that the Lord is going to recreate the heavens and the earth. And there will be a new heaven and a new earth. So why, how come, what's wrong with the old system? And once I started looking at this and seeing how many times there were collisions, how many cataclysms, how many times they intersected and bumped into each other. Okay. Now I understand why he's going to redo it, because it's not working. So God only knows what's going to happen on this next passing. I mean, I just want to say this for anyone listening. Nibiru is not supposed to hit the Earth, okay?
Yeah.
But one of its asteroids, one of its pieces.
One of the bodies being dragged along with it.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what's supposed to happen.
And once again, it doesn't even have to make collision. All it has to do is something of decent mass just has to enter the system to perturb things enough,
which is happening as we speak. I mean, the sun is like the coronal mass ejections and the solar flares are happening more often.
Yes,
the sun is going through a very intense cycle,
constantly reclassifying.
You've been seeing this. I know the magnetosphere. Last year, 2022, we had 4 cracks in the magnetosphere, which is not good. Okay.
Yeah.
So, and this is what we call the Schumann resonance, the Schumann frequency, which is basically measured all around the planet. It's a thing. It's not some woo-woo spiritual thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
it's the energy. It's like the heartbeat of the Earth. So the heartbeat of the Earth is supposed to be like, you know, 7.83 hertz.
Yep.
But we've been seeing it like, you know, in the 20s, 30s, 50s, 60s, 80s. It even went up to 80 something last year. And on those days, this is one of the reasons why, you know, astrology doesn't work anymore. Because this stuff completely overrides astrology. Like if people are following astrology, oh, I'm having a lunar transit on this day, or I'm going to have something going on, or oh, this is supposed to be a good time for me. And it's like, oh, it's a terrible day for everyone.
Yeah.
Because this is causing mental, emotional, and physical illnesses. Because people are not used to this accelerated energy. So, you know, there's, you know, and so the Schumann frequency really needs to be the weather of the day.
Oh,
if the Schumann frequency is low,
that'd be great if they added that to like weather.com, what the Schumann resonance is for the day. That'd be sweet.
Yeah.
I kind of want to write that app. Like, what's your localized Schumann resonance? You know,
that would be an
interesting app to write.
That. Yeah, I agree. And the same thing with the solar weather. It's becoming more important than the regular weather.
Absolutely. Ella, I cannot thank you enough for coming on the show tonight, for talking about this.
Oh,
I have been wanting to talk to you about we've mentioned Nibiru, things like that in our previous conversations, but I've been wanting to do an in-depth episode about it and talk about it for a long time. And I'm so glad to have somebody who actively studied with Zachariah on the show to discuss it. So thank you so much for your time. Before we let you go, let everybody know, do you have any appearances coming up? Any conferences that you're going to be at? Let everybody know your website where they can go to buy books. Time for shameless self-promotion.
Okay. Well, it's always wonderful talking to you. I enjoy our friendship. So thank you for having me. You can reach me, who's who in the Cosmic Zoo.com. My books are on, and also on Amazon and Facebook. And I will be speaking at the UFO Con 2023, March 17th through the 19th in San Francisco.
All right.
So that's my next conference. And I think the end of this, January 23rd, I think I'm scheduled to be on their radio. So if you want to tune into that, I have it on my Facebook page. You can get all the info. But it's basically UFOCon2023.com.
All right. Well,
to go.
Ella, once again, thank you so much for your time. I greatly appreciate it. I always love our conversations.
My pleasure, Chris.
You are one of the guests that I have on that inevitably it feels like we've been talking for a minute or two, and I look down and it's at like minute 45. And it's like, okay. Wow, we've had such an amazing conversation, and I can tell right now it is nowhere near over. Lot of people have asked why I have gone to the format that I've gone to with a pre-recorded guest and a live guest. And it's like, hey, I would love a conversation to be locked down to 45 minutes. Number one, I don't want to stop a good conversation when it's going. especially with a guest like you that is willing to go long and willing to carry the conversation and talk about it. And I don't want that to be pressed by somebody else's schedule. So having the pre-recorded guest in the second part and as much time as we need for the topic in the first part, it's great because we really do get to stretch legs a little bit and not be locked down to a hard schedule. So thank you so much for the conversation, as always.
Likewise. Thank you for having me. And I'll see you soon.
Absolutely. We'll talk to you very soon, Ella. We'll go ahead and let you go now so that we can continue on with things while you are online, checking out all of the amazing work of Ella LeBain over at Who's Who in the Cosmic Zoo.com. Make sure to stop on by CuriousRealm.com, folks. That is where you can find all the episodes. That's where you can find all of the Knowledge Vault, where you can get declassified government materials, all kinds of things. Stop on by the Experiencer page, CuriousRealm.com/story, and share your experience with us, and we will bring it up to our guests and professionals that we have on the show and hopefully help you make some sense out of it. Stay tuned through this commercial break, folks. When we come back, we will be talking with Mary Joyce discussing her book, Spy in the Sky, and anomalies on the Earth, Mars, and the Moon being found through Google Earth and other such things. We will be talking about that with Mary Joyce right after this, folks. With the rise in attention to the health benefits of cannabis and cannabinoids, including CBD, True Hemp Science has become one of the premier providers of full-spectrum CBD and CBD-related products. Using a proprietary spagyric process, True Hemp Science extracts maximum benefit from the whole hemp plant. Buds, leaves, stems, seeds, even roots. every part of the plant is used and then reused to formulate a rich, complex profile of CBD, CBD derivatives, and terpenes guaranteed to provide the relief and benefits you need daily. Visit TrueHempScience.com to experience the best CBD oils, edibles, and topicals on the market today. And use code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire purchase of $50 or more and get 2 25-milligram CBD cookies or brownies free. That website again is TrueHempScience.com and the code is CURIOUS7. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies, Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today. And let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultation and workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training. And use code CURIOUS20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website, again, is PodcastCadet.com. Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store. Well, hello everybody and welcome back from that commercial break. Thank you so much to all of our sponsors over the last year: WebWorks Wireless, True Hemp Science, the amazing Dr. Kimberly McGeorge. Make sure to stop on by and check all those guys out. They are the ones who help make this show possible. If you would like to be a sponsor, make sure to stop on by CuriousRealm.com. You can contact us directly there. You can contact us via our mother network, HC Universal Network. This new year is going to be fantastic. I can't wait. We have had an awesome first year of rebrand, an amazing number of guests, and so happy to bring this guest back, Mary Joyce. She is the author of Spy in the Sky. She is the author of so many other books. Anytime we have her on, the evolution chart of the episode just goes crazy for about 60 days. I love watching stats from Mary Joyce. So welcome back to the show, Mary. How are you doing today?
Well, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well. Like you were saying, I am your first interview of the new year. So
It usually starts about a week into the new year, so you really are the first. So that's a wonderful way to start.
I'm trying to get things done like crazy as I get ready to head out of town for, well, two straight weeks. So, it's been interesting. It's been fun. I had a great holiday season. I hope you did as well, Mary.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Last time we talked to you was actively right as Spy in the Sky was hitting shelves. And my copy of it showed up about 3 days after our interview. This, Mary, has to be hands down one of the most illustrated books of this type that I have ever seen. I mean, full color images all over the place. And it's not like a typical book like this, where if you have full color images everywhere, that it's like $50. Like, it's utterly affordable, and an amazing reference of anomalies, not just on Earth, but on Mars and the moon as well. Let's get into what brought you into your world of research over at skyshipsovercashers.com. And what brought you to writing Spy in the Sky?
As you know, we've had this website called, I can't even talk this morning, skyshipsovercashers.com. And it was started because we kept seeing so many UFOs over this mountaintop town of Cashers, North Carolina. And this book really was a spinoff from our website. I had been collecting so much information that I absolutely wasn't seeing anywhere else, and it became a mission to get this information out for people to see. By using Google Earth, which you can now view Mars, and you can view the moon, and you can view the Earth, and I call the book Spy in the Sky because I discovered things simply by spying on things on these different orbs in our galaxy. And it's really a mission to get this book out. It's not a moneymaker for me. As you know, when you print almost constant photos on every page, it gets expensive. So in order to make it affordable, I am not making money off this book, but I feel really driven to get this information out to as many people as possible, because it's information that's being withheld from, from the public.
Well, and, you know, there is a lot of information that's withheld from the public, Mary. We had you on, I think the first time we had you on, we were actually talking about deep underground military bases. And not many people realize the number of tunnels that exist under our country, not only military wise, but civilian as well. I just posted the other day a video of a like plasma torch robot that digs tunnels. The technology that has come about, excuse me, over the last many years has been amazing. And, you know, when, now granted, it has just come out over the last couple few weeks, the testimony of Corey Good, his deposition, and the fact that the secret space program, at least as he spoke about it, did not exist. It was all a part of his quote intellectual property, the fan fiction that he made up. However, that does not mean that there aren't anomalies and things out there. Even whenever we went to the moon the first few times, found anomalies, found all kinds of strange things on video.
Now, when I was using Google Earth to explore the moon, I really didn't expect to find anything, because there has been airbrushing of images from the moon literally for decades now. And so I was really surprised. I did actually find something that's still there for all to see. And with that image, I give the coordinates so that everybody can find it for themselves. And it's a white pyramid. It's on the side of the moon that faces Earth, which surprised me also, because most of the things have been on the backside of the moon. It's fairly good size. Everybody can envision a football field. Well, it's 28 feet longer than a football field on each side. And I was just real surprised to find that.
Wow. And, you know, I myself over the last, I guess, month and a half, really, since the lunar eclipse occurred, I've gotten kind of deep dive. I thought about you when I first started doing it. I was like, I need to contact Mary Joyce. I have gone deep dive into lunar photography, lunar observation, things like that. Getting some pretty amazing pictures, and I'm trying to find the one. I actively got one all of a week ago that I was like, I've got to dig into this more, because it's just a strange looking crater. And as opposed to the other craters that are round and have, you know, jagged edges, raised edges, these don't. They're, it's like two just black craters next to each other that are connected with a straight bar in between them.
I would love to see that.
Absolutely. I'm trying to find it as we talk right now. It's pretty incredible what you can get, what you can find, even with, I'm not using any incredible technology. I'm using a standard Canon camera and like a $150 spotting scope. But able to get some pretty detailed pictures of the moon. So if you are somebody out there who's an anomaly hunter, wants to do this kind of stuff, you can use Google Earth, like Mary as well, but you can also verify these things from your own backyard.
As long as you're not in a city where you're blinded by the lights, well, right?
I'm square in the middle of Cedar Park. I have three neighbors with lights on in their backyard.
And you're still getting it.
That is what you can get. It's pretty incredible. I mean, I've got pictures of the Orion Nebula from my backyard. It's pretty wild what you can get, even in the city. Especially with lunar observation, because once the moon is out, it is the brightest object in the night sky.
Since we're going off on photography here, let me go in a slightly different direction.
Sure.
When we first started our website, this is back in 2008, there was a family, a mother and a grandmother and an 8-year-old, and they had been seeing these UFOs at night over their house. And during the daytime, the 8-year-old was out with a camera snapping pictures of the sky because her mother and grandmother had been talking so much about UFOs. She was just snapping. And when she got back home, she and her mother were looking at the pictures she took, and most of them were, you know, not worth anything. But she at one point had aimed the camera straight at the sun, and there was a perfect saucer-shaped UFO hiding in the brilliance of the sun. Now, I found that really interesting, and I kind of put that in the back of my head. And then later, about a year later, I heard about a term called sky fishing. And this is where you take your camera and just do real rapid sequential shots into the sky, and sometimes you get lucky and you catch a fish or you catch a UFO. So I put these two concepts together, and one day I was up near Glenville Lake, which is a high mountain lake here in western North Carolina, and I just started snapping sequential pictures real quickly, aimed directly at the sun. And I caught an orb descending down into the sun and then disappearing into the brilliance of the sun. Well, for a while, I got rather obsessed with just snapping pictures of the sun. And one of the most unique ones I found was an orb just to the side of the sun, and it had orbs going out from it. Now, all the skeptics were saying, well, that's just an optical effect. Well, we had the advantage of having contact with a man who had been involved with designing the Hubble telescope. And he looked at it and he said, that is not a camera anomaly. That is something else. So he didn't poo-poo it, and he had more credibility than all the critics we were hearing from. So if anybody wants to experiment with this, you do not need an expensive camera to do it. I have a simple Canon camera, a little mm-hmm. one, which I use to catch all these pictures I'm telling you about. And my bigger camera won't do it for me because it goes into lockdown mode, because when I aim it at the sun, it says it's overexposed. Yeah. So my cheapy camera is giving me better pictures than my expensive camera.
Yeah, yeah, and absolutely. You can get some amazing results. Here, I've actually found the picture. Let me try and bring it up on my system here where I can zoom in on it. So this is one that I took of the moon during the day, just before sunset. And if you look right there, you can see this strange barbell-shaped crater where there's two craters next to each other and what looks to be almost a bridge or a channel in between them.
I see what you're seeing.
Really strange, really wild. And I've been trying to focus in on that area again, now, especially now that I've got a little bit more magnification. But like I said, it has become an obsession. I don't think I would have... I never thought that I would be the person before the age of 50 that would be shaking his fist at a cloud, Mary. Like, I hate you, clouds. Go away. It's all I think about all day long is like, man, I can't wait till the wife puts the kid to bed, because then I can sneak out with the telescope and start taking some pictures.
Well, here's something that you can do. In my book, I have a picture of that white pyramid. Mm-hmm. And I also have a distant shot with a star on it to show you the general location of where that is. So maybe that visual can be a guide for you to do some more exploring.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it, once again, the images in the book are absolutely amazing, absolutely detailed. What brought you to start compiling all of this together, Mary?
Like I said, it piled up, and then I realized how much I had and how it just wasn't out there for the public to know. And then I did the book. I did not start out with the idea I'm going to do a book about this. It just kind of accumulated in the website.
Mm. And you know, with the website in mind, it has been a great resource for people to be able to drop evidence, get a hold of you. How frequently do you hear from people with pictures, cases, things like that?
I don't know how to answer that, but that can be both good and bad. I get to wade through a lot of things where when I really delve into them, you can see that they are not what the person thinks that they are. Mm. You know, you can really zoom in on some people's pictures and you go, oh my God, that is really a bird, you know, when you really zero in. So I'll do contrast, I'll zoom in, I'll do different things to see if what the person thinks they're seeing is really there. And it's about a 50% chance that it's real.
Yeah, and, you know, I belong to a lot of groups on social media, quite a few UFO groups, things like that. And I, after spending, I'm 47 now and started doing videography work when I was about 23, 24. So after spending the better part of my life behind a lens, I tend to break a lot of hearts, Mary, because I can explain why things happen.
And that's important because that makes you more credible. And hopefully it makes our website more credible because you just don't want to get fooled. And let me give you another example.
Please.
And this is something that someone didn't send me, but it was repeatedly shown on the internet or on YouTube, and it was a stone on Mars, and it looked like it had a form of hieroglyphs on it. It looked very, very convincing. I spent a great deal of time going back to find the original NASA photo of that, and the inscriptions were not on it. So somebody had very skillfully created this thing that really wasn't real at all. So that's the kind of tomfoolery that you sometimes have to deal with.
Oh, absolutely. And as, once again, somebody who spent years behind the lens, somebody who spent years going through and creating things from scratch on Photoshop, like, it's not rocket math. Like, an eighth grader with Photoshop experience can make a falsity.
I have never learned Photoshop because I want to be able to say that I do not know how to do Photoshop, because hopefully that will add to my credibility that I haven't created the things that I post.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And I mean, here's a prime example, Mary. Here's a video that I took. Now, if I posted that in any group for UFOs, whatever, and just blind posted it, and put, like, recorded in Austin, Texas, how many people do you think would be like, wow, yeah, that's wild, that's awesome, what an incredible craft? What you are actively seeing is the star Sirius out of focus, and the movement is being caused by the iris trying to focus on the out of focus object. The spot is from the middle of the lens, and the motion upward is quite literally from being zoomed in and it drifting upward naturally. Like, that is the actual movement of the star across the night sky.
So that's an excellent example of how you have to be really careful before you jump in and believe the things that you see on YouTube or anywhere else.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because it blew my mind when I saw it. And there's a reason why I posted it on the Curious Realm page with the caveat. Like, it can be very easy to misinterpret something when given it blind. You have to know the circumstances under which a picture or video was taken.
I also like to post things from people that I have in some way or another met, because in meeting people, even if it's just with Zoom, you begin to sense where they're really coming from and if they're legit. I mean, it's not foolproof, but it is helpful. And putting up stuff just blind is foolish.
Well, yeah, I mean, no location, no direction, no time of day. There's one gentleman who regularly posts in a group that I'm on that just drops stuff, like, recorded in San Antonio. And everybody will be like, that's planes. Like,
gotcha.
And the poor guy, because it's hard. You know, it's hard not to have a confirmation bias. It's hard to be a skeptical believer, Mary.
And that's what we need to be, a skeptical believer.
Yeah, absolutely. Because nobody's saying that the anomaly is not there, but what we have to do is get rid of the known quantitative and remain the anomaly.
By the way, I think this is a good point to emphasize. In the book, which I, Skyships or Spy in the Sky, I try to do everything so that people can find these for themselves. There are coordinates with the photos. Mm-hmm. So people can go and find them for themselves. So they know that, you know, they're really seeing what they're seeing. And I deliberately did that. And, it also enables people to expand their own ability because, Google Earth is available to anyone. It doesn't cost any money. And again, up at the top of that particular page, there's an icon of Saturn, because that clearly looks like a planet. And at that point, you can pick Earth or the Moon or Mars. And it's incredible what I found. Now, you don't find these things immediately or quickly. I'll give you a good example of that. I found what I call a human habitat that's on, or a habitat for some kind of being, in the northern hemisphere of Mars, and pretty good size, about 700 feet in length. And it looks like some of the projected images that people have designed for, quote, the future of Mars. But it's really there now. It was 5 years later when I was cruising the southern hemisphere that I found one that had a similar structure, but it was literally 10 times bigger. So it was probably built later. And it was 7,000 feet in length. So I have both those images in the book, but that was over a 5 year period to get one in the north and one in the southern hemisphere.
Yeah. Yeah. And it that's just it. It's much like doing any document research, doing research on stuff like that, and doing topological research is time consuming. There is a mass amount of data to go over. And when you're trying to, I mean, it could take you all day long to properly scan something the size of the state of Arizona.
And what I would do is I would just, you know, take some time during a day and scan a certain part of Mars, and maybe a day or two later go back to it. I mean, it wasn't like one continuous search. You bore yourself to death that way, because half the time you won't find anything. But I did, another thing that really caught my attention was I found three UFOs that were on the surface of Mars, and one was literally parked there. It was, oh gosh, if I can remember what it was like maybe 400 feet in diameter, no, 4 miles in diameter, I believe.
Oh man.
And you could see the shadow. So it was sitting on the surface, creating a shadow, and it had a raised center in the middle of it. The one you have on the screen is a different one, but that's one that's literally crashed into the soil of Mars. And that on the top skinny photo on the screen right now, there's a yellow line, and that's something like 4,400 feet in length.
Wow.
Yeah, that's right. And so it skidded quite a distance before it plowed into the soil.
Wow. And whatever that is, the anomaly. And that's just it. To get rid of the known quantitative and once again leave the anomaly. When you're searching for anomaly, it can be hard not to get carried away. It can be hard not to get caught up. How do you go about filtering data, Mary?
All I can tell you is that I spent a number of years as a newspaper editor, and newspaper people are naturally skeptical, and my brain still works that way, and so I have to see, you know, evidence that I find very convincing before I'll post it.
Oh, same here. Same here. Most of the time, especially in the Curious Realm group, we have numerous people in there, about 1,000 people. And sometimes somebody will be like, hey, you posted this earlier from somebody else. And I'm like, yes, I'll typically post it from three sources if I can find it.
Well, that's a pretty high goal. That you can't always do that, but that's great.
I typically try to do it from one from abroad and one from each side of the aisle here in the United States.
very
that,
good.
That way you can at least have a balanced view in the data that you're filtering. And I think the important thing is understanding the fact that it's just a set of data. It is a cold set of data, and you've got to look at it that way. And you've got to look at each piece of datum is just that. It's a piece of datum. It doesn't destroy your paradigm or what you believe or what have you. Even if, hey, you thought it was something strange and it's something ordinary that you didn't know about, that's okay.
Absolutely.
It's been really interesting over the last, I guess, 5-6 years to see, I won't call it mania, but I will call it fanaticism.
In many fields.
Yeah, yeah. And I think a lot of that comes from, I mean, we tend to feed each other as people. We tend to hunt and peck in the same orders that we hang out in. And that in and of itself, once again, creates a confirmation bias. So it can be hard sometimes to even be amongst a crowd of people that are willing to call what you see other than.
Gotcha.
You know?
By the way, a little while ago, you briefly flashed on an underwater airport that I book. And I don't know how well people can see that, but it's a fairly decent shot there. What happened was that there was a discovery a number of years ago, which was not my discovery, and it was a huge structure off the coast of Malibu, California. And I thought it looked like something from an ancient civilization. It had huge pillars and a huge roof and a lot of UFO activity in that area. And I decided one day that there may be other things like that. So over time, I explored the underwater along the coast from Alaska down to the Baja Peninsula and found a lot of remnants of ancient structures. This one was especially interesting because it looks like an airport. And beneath the one you see in blue is the one that's underwater in the Baja Peninsula. The one beneath it is the Spokane Airport. And you can see how similar the structure is. Now, the biggest difference is that the one that's under the water is the runway is 89 miles in length. The largest runway in the world right now is just slightly more than 3 miles. That's a huge difference. And these structures,
massive difference.
The structures that I have found along our western coast, indicate that there was that's the Malibu. That's the one that got me started. And I do not remember the stats on this right now, but those pillars beneath that heavy roof are hundreds of feet tall.
Yeah. Yeah, massive. We had a fantastic conversation with Merrill Fankhauser about that. He has done quite a bit of work.
He wrote a song about it.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And it's interesting when you start looking at, once again, things like this. You say underwater airport. It's hard to call it anything else when you look at, if you know anything about airports or know what the runways look like. I fly almost 40 weeks a year at one point in my life. That pretty much looks like runways.
And when you see it in the book, you can see the detail even better. It becomes clearer.
And once again, even if not runways, what the hell was making something that large on that scope in California so long ago that it would now be that far underwater?
Right. Now, anybody who's gotten into prehistory knows that in the Atlantic, there was supposedly the continent of Atlantis that sank into the ocean. In the Pacific, there was the continent known as Mu or Lemuria or Pan that supposedly also sank into the ocean. Well, I did. I learned some things about the old legends of the Micronesian islands, and they talk about giants that flew in to where they were at one time. All right, you put those ancient legends together with these structures that we're actually able to find now, and you go, there must have indeed been a giant race that was very active in our Pacific Ocean at one point. And there's a lot of evidence for it. On one island, I'm not going to be, it's Micronesia right now, I can't think of the name of it. They found a skeleton, I think the largest one was about 10 feet tall. So there was definitely a very different civilization. The civilization in the Atlantic was quite different. There we find remnants of pyramids. There are no pyramidal structures that we found in the Pacific, and the size is humongous in the Pacific compared to the Atlantis, the Atlantic. And again, for some reason, this is something that the famous they, don't want us to know about. I found two pyramids south of Paradise Island in the Bahamas. And right after I posted it, suddenly there was this little tiny photo strip that looked like a Band-Aid had put been put right on top of where those pyramids were. So in the book, I show the original pictures that I found, and then I show the strip where they tried to cover, where they covered it up. Why they want to hide so many things of our ancient history, I do not know. That's also true in Antarctica. And this was another really exciting discovery, which was originally discovered by a gal named Mary Hall. And then she and I both began to do further exploring. And in September of 2021, after several months of searching, she found the remnants of an ancient city emerging from the melting ice in Antarctica. And the ice in Antarctica is melting rather rapidly. And it's a city structure. You can see the rectangular walls. And you can see how these rectangular walls or city structures kind of flow along hillsides or rivers like cities naturally develop in our world today. And we ended up finding the remnants of five ancient cities emerging from Antarctica. And wow. This is what makes this incredibly interesting. The ice, most scientists agree that Antarctica has been covered in ice for about 34 million years. That means that these structures that are being revealed are the oldest in the world. Compare it to the Great Pyramid. The Great Pyramid is not even 5,000 years old.
Yeah.
Compare 5,000 years to 34 million. I mean, that's a discovery beyond belief. And this is another place where I have the pictures we originally took, and then I have pictures where there's been a deliberate effort to blur it out.
And, you know, it's interesting, the airbrushing that you're talking about. I'm not going to lie, people. My photos are not untreated. There is some airbrushing involved because, hey, you get dust on your lens, stuff like that. And you can tell it's dust on your lens because when the moon moves, it doesn't.
Gotcha. Yeah,
so when you're shooting like a burst of five shots, like snap, 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 and the same spots are there and the moon moves behind it,
it's definitely
you may have some airbrushing to take care of.
Yeah, well, that's a whole different thing.
That's a totally different thing than some of the airbrushing that has definitely been done to NASA photos.
I wouldn't even use the term airbrushing in that case. I would call it dusting and cleaning.
Yeah. Just in reference to the ancient civilizations that you're talking about, I just pulled up out of 4WWL out of Louisiana. Amateur archaeologists may have found an ancient city off the coast of St. Bernard. This is quite literally right off the Texas-Louisiana Gulf Coast. And he is talking about a temple complex that may be about 12,000 years old that he is located with sonar out there in the shallows. So there is massive evidence of there being cultures the whole world over that
are very, very, very ancient.
Yes, absolutely. And as we've discussed over the last couple of weeks, especially with Brad Olson, the concept of the master builders, the people that went across the globe and who knows where else, because when you start looking at these things, the structure of them, even across the world, so entirely similar, the layout
except,
of complexes,
when
things
I talk
like
about
that.
The Pacific, those structures in the Pacific are not similar to anything else in the world.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable some of the anomalies that are out there, and you have done a phenomenal job with Spy in the Sky, really chronicling a lot of that. And like you said, this is stuff that you have just compiled over years of ecstatic research, just kind of deep diving through Google Maps and taking pictures and saving them and saving coordinates. What an entire compendium to come up with. Honestly, Mary.
And there's been so much of it that's been spread out over the years. So there would be some of these things would be in different archival years. And so it needed to be brought together in one place. So that's another reason for the book.
Well, and I mean, I can tell you right now, just for the month that I've been doing astrophotography, it blows my wife's mind how quick it always has. I used to go and photograph her live performances, things like that. And she'd be like, "Oh, that's a good shot." And I'd delete it. And she'd be like, "Why'd you delete that?" And I'm like, "Because your hand was blurred. I'm not going to keep a shot where something's blurred in it. The next shot's clean."
Right. Like, more profit, right?
Yeah, exactly. But even going through, like, because in a session, even a 15, 20-minute session of just taking different shots of the moon, things like that, I will easily take 150 shots. So, and you have to remember, much like the video that you saw and the images that you saw, that is the size of the moon. So when it moves, I don't have a tracking mount, so it's not moving with the moon. The moon is actively moving in my field of view, so probably about every 3 out of 5 shots is blurred in some way, shape, or form.
Technical ability. Let me bring up something else that's in the book, and this was brought to me by a man in the Netherlands back in 2013, and he's the one that came up with the term dusting and cleaning. He took original NASA photos taken by the SOHO satellite of the sun, and many times, over a week's time, if you keep looking at the SOHO photos of the sun, you will probably see some kind of UFO in some of the images. But the ones around the sun are humongous. They are all bigger than Jupiter, which is our largest planet. Some of them are bigger than the diameter of the sun itself. So we're talking truly huge. And so what he did, and this is something you might be able to do, is he took these SOHO satellite photos, and then he dusted and cleaned the debris out of the images so that it would get real clear. And the detail, absolute detail in these UFOs is mind-boggling, and the UFOs don't look like what you would expect a UFO to look like. We named two of them over flying objects. One we named the Isis Hotel, and the other one we named it the Phoenix Hotel, because they almost have like a, there you go, have like a wing structure, that top picture. And when you get into the detail, it looks like a flying cruise ship or a flying condominium. And I indeed think that there are giant ships that are cruising our universe.
I definitely believe the same thing. You know, stopping by a nearby star to refuel, what have you, to pick up some plasma, absolutely within the realm of reason. If you were traveling, and once you're traveling at that point, you're dealing with a different realm of technology to begin with.
Go back to that last screen that you had up there. That second picture kind of looks like a flute.
Mm.
And that's only a portion of it. And that thing extends out, and the detail when you really see it is quite clear. And that thing goes out like an extension rod, and it is longer than the width of the sun.
Yeah, it's massive. These structures that we are talking about, that you have these images of, are massive structures.
And I'm serious about you doing some research. With your technical ability, you might be able to take those SOHO satellite photos and do the dusting and cleaning like he did.
Yeah.
Because I no longer have contact with him. I don't know if he died. I don't know if he was told to quit doing what he was doing. But we stayed in contact, I think, for 2 or 3 years, and then it's like he just disappeared off the map.
Wow.
Even his YouTube channel was never updated again. Any attempt I attempted to get in touch with him no longer worked. So I don't know what's happened to him.
Wow.
He may simply have been shut down because he was exposing incredible stuff.
Yeah. Who knows? I mean, I've definitely had a couple of guests on that I wish I could track them down. But they popped off radar the same way. And, the same way I've been doing lunar work, I've been taking pictures of the sun, things like that as well, with intent. Both of these obsessions I have right now are for anomalous search.
The SOHO satellite constantly takes a picture, I think, every 12 minutes of the sun.
Yep.
And you can go to that page, and so you can see the latest feed from the SOHO satellite. And you can just real quickly skim through it and find out if there's something worth zeroing in on. And I just will periodically check in on it in case occasionally get lucky.
Yeah, I'm actively looking into getting a coronal kit so that I can see just the corona of the sun. Because that is how you find a lot more of those anomalies. Once you block out the main light and leave just the auroral glow.
And that's what the SOHO satellite has to do, too. There's always a black circle in the middle that covers the intense center of the sun, because otherwise the camera burns out.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I can here's a prime example right here, Mary. On my rig, I have my spotting scope on one side and then a 150 to 600 millimeter lens on the other side. And didn't really think about it. I am avid about putting the rear lens cap on whenever I swap my camera from telescope to lens, to keep things off of it. But I didn't really think about, let me put the front lens cap on, too. So this is why you don't ever, ever, ever look at the sun without filters. You can see right there where, because of me moving to get my shot on the other device, you can see where the sun literally burned three separate holes through the plastic lens cap.
Oh, is that what I'm seeing? I was confused. Okay, wow. That becomes impressive when I learn that.
When I took it off, there was just this solid laser-like beam going through smoke down to the ground.
Wow.
I was like, well, if I'm ever out in the wild, I'll never need fire making. I'll always have a camera with me from now on.
That makes me think of the little boys when I was in grade school who would take magnifying lenses to fry bugs.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But it was one of those, I was sitting there right next to it. I mean, the thing was a foot away from my head and my face is buried in my camera. And I'm like, why do I smell burning plastic?
Oh, my goodness.
And I look over and just see a plume of smoke coming out of the back of my lens cap.
Wow.
But that is a prime example of exactly how powerful of a light that is and why you have to block it out to see anything. I mean, even the images that I have here, that is a filter so dark that if you put it up to a light, you can't see the light.
Hmm. Very interesting.
And that's the only way that I actively wear a pair of solar goggles, like what you look at solar eclipses through whenever I'm doing that, because otherwise I've still got to look through a peep sight to find the sun.
Wow.
To line up my shots.
So you've become much more scientific since we last talked.
Oh, I have become obsessed, Mary. It was probably shortly after we talked last time that the lunar eclipse happened, and it was just one of those. It was like, I've got a ton of video equipment. I've got a, like 6K video camera and zoom lenses, and I should be able to get something. And I was more than impressed with what I got. And at that point, it was like, well, man, if I've got this capability. And I started playing around with other equipment that I had and bought a couple of adapters here and there, and then spent literally, I think what I have is literally a spotting scope. It's not even like a telescope. It's only a 90 millimeter.
Gotcha.
And I think it was like $150, something like that. I am not using an expensive amount of equipment at all.
Well, maybe between the two of us, we'll inspire other people to do their own exploring, because it can be affordable.
Oh,
I mean, the things I caught with the little Canon camera is, that's the kind that fits in your shirt pocket.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we had the head of backyard astronomy on a few years ago about the idea. People forget the fact that backyard astronomers, backyard scientists, we're the ones that find half the comets. You know, we find all kinds of asteroids, comets, all kinds of things because our eyes are on the sky more than actual observatories.
Right.
There's only one or two people at a time working at an observatory, and they're working on something very, very honed. You know, whereas if you're talking about backyard astronomers and people just looking at the same swath of the night sky over and over and over and over and over, there's thousands of us all over the place. So we can gather a mass amount of data really, really fast. And, one of the things we talk about with other anomaly hunters like cryptid hunters, Bigfoot hunters, is the fact of universities, wildlife departments, and states are actively starting to come to Sasquatch clubs.
No kidding. That's good to hear.
For trail cam footage. Things like that, because you're out putting out trail cams where we don't have money or funds to do it. So if we can get your footage, that helps us expand our research.
Right.
So,
you know, people are always talking about, well, when is the government going to disclose this or that? And I have said for years now that the government is only going to expose what we as the public force them to expose. And yep. So disclosure is happening with programs like yours, with websites like the one we
Thank
have.
Thank you, Mary.
And it's important work, and it is spreading. We have more and more people that are getting this kind of information out. Yeah. And if the tricksters would just stay out of the picture, we would make much faster progress.
Yeah, it's only what we force them to expose or what they can make money off exposing.
Correct.
One of the two. And to look at even the realm of disclosure that has happened over the last few years since 2017 and Lou Elizondo going on CNN, a huge conversation has been opened, most definitely. But all of that really seems like a planned dissemination of information.
I still think they only expose what they're forced to.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because even that, like, it's out there. It's there now. And the whole reason that the congressional hearing happened was that the people in charge of that money were like, hey, wait a minute. How come we didn't know about this?
Right. Yep, that's what it takes.
Forced to be exposed. So, yeah. Mary, thank you so much for coming on. I love talking with you. We always have a great conversation. It's an obsession once you get into anomaly hunting and once you really start rabbit holing into that stuff. And the fact that you have taken years of rabbit holing on anomaly hunting on Mars, Earth, the moon, and put it into Spy in the Sky, not just with amazing pictures, Mary, but with coordinates, where you can actively go and type in the coordinates and see it for yourself and explore it. It's not treated imagery that Mary has done in any way or anything like that. So incredible work.
The pictures in there have not been tampered with.
Yeah. They are straight screenshots, and it's pretty incredible when you start going through and hitting those points of interest. I'm definitely going to start trying to get my lunar map down and try to find the pyramid and take some high res photos if I can, Mary. I'll start dropping you some moon images.
If you get something really good and we post it on the website, I certainly will give you and your podcast credit.
Well, I greatly appreciate it. Before we let you go, Mary, let everybody know where they can go to follow Skyship Over Cachers, where they can go to find your book, where they can go to contact you if they have evidence or an account themselves.
The website is skyshipsovercachers.com. Cashers is spelled just like the cashier at the grocery store. And on that home page, it says how to report a sighting, and that's has the contact information for us or for our website. That answers one of your questions. All of the books are available on Amazon. Let's see, that takes care of another one. What else do I need? Yeah, there's a pretty good description of that book on Amazon. So anybody can go and check that. And when that book first came out, we could not keep up with the demand for it. And, we were making one printing after another, which really was a delightful surprise, but also a bit of a challenge.
Absolutely. It can be. I know quite a few people that released right up around the same time as you. And man, their books were the same way, where they could not keep them. They were having problems keeping up with orders.
We should be okay now. We have them the last.
Oh, it's fantastic though. If you're going to have a problem, that's a great problem to have.
Gotcha.
You know, it's kind of like I tell podcasters when they go, oh, well, if I host all this stuff at my own website, what happens if I get too much traffic? I'm like, that's a good problem to have.
Right.
That's how you know you need to grow.
Right.
So,
well, by the way, skyshipsovercashers.com is how you can find our website. If you type in skyshipsovercashers.com onto Facebook, you will find our Facebook page. And the only real advantage to going on the Facebook is that we're able to update that sometimes more frequently than the website, simply because I need a webmaster to get stuff on the
I'm not going to say it's a whole process, but it's a whole lot different than just hopping onto a platform, typing something and hitting enter.
Right. Yep. So, I need our technical guy to do that.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much once again for your time, as always, Mary.
I wish you a really nice new year. I hope you're very successful and very happy. And
thank you.
May
you
all
as
go well.
Well
for you.
Absolutely. Please do hold the line while we close things out with the audience. While you are online checking out all of the amazing work of Mary Joyce and SkyshipsOverCashers.com, make sure to stop on by CuriousRealm.com. That is our website. That's where you can follow us on just about every form of social media that exists. We are on probably about 80 platforms out there right now. Been getting quite a few rumbles and hits on BitChute, CloutHub. If you are over there on MeWe, Gab, Minds, any of the alternative platforms, we are over there. Stop on by, check us out. Make sure to visit the store, CuriousRealm.com/store. That is where you can find books and other works by our guests. Once again, everybody, thank you so much for continuing to tune in. Thank you so much for a fantastic 2022 with Curious Realm. I cannot wait to see what the rest of 2023 brings to us. Take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and remember, stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault on our website, CuriousRealm.com. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast services, as well as YouTube, Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV through the APR TV app, available on all app markets. Curious Realm is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great content or to become a sponsor of Curious Realm or other podcasts, visit HCUniversalNetwork.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.